20th Century Fox. This is a true story based on incidents which occurred in the latter part of World War II. It deals with one of the most hazardous and unique branches of the armed forces, the underwater demolition teams. This film could not have been produced without the active cooperation of the Department of Defense and the United States Navy. Twentieth Century Fox presents Richard Widmark, Dana Andrews, Gary Merrill in The Frogmen. Music, Cyril Mockridge. Directed by Lloyd Bacon.
That don't look nothing like
a sketch drawing of a handsome man wearing a naval cap.
You got him looking like one of them Joes on a war bond poster. The skipper was a man.
So he was a man. What's this, a dame?
That's not what Kinsella means, Canarsie. He means the skipper's jaw was like a hunk of granite. And his eyes were blue.
Yeah. You make blue eyes with black ink.
Simmer down, Rembrandt. All Pappy means is his jaw was tougher and his eyes were, well, kind and friendly.
Look, fellas, don't get me wrong. I feel the same way about the skipper as you do. But I've done this over 20 times already.
Just the same, all I can say is if that looks like Mr. Cassidy did, I look like...
You look like my uncle, and I hate my uncle.
Take another crack at it, can I see? Come on, Pappy, it's your deal.
A game of cards is disturbed by the appearance on deck of two crewmen carrying mops and buckets.
My, how you talk.
These lads just got no manners.
Okay, fellas, let them do their job. Operation overboard.
The card players get a soaking.
Me and Joe are only dead.
Sure, we were just ripping.
Yeah, we don't think it's funny. We figure we didn't ask to be aboard this bucket, and if you guys...
Sure, forget it.
Yeah.
What's the verdict, fellas? Shall we toss them overboard or give them another chance to be little gentlemen?
Oh! Come on.
You guys been having yourself a ball. Well, me and Joe and the whole ship's company been waiting on your hand and foot, like it was VIPs or something.
We are.
Tell them the facts of life, Jake.
Listen, Swabbies. There are roughly 3 million men in this man's navy. There are only 1,000 of us guys spread out over the Pacific. You and your boyfriends have the honor, the pleasure, and the distinction of having aboard 30 of these...
Fearless.
Red-blooded.
Death-defying.
Amen. So you got to appreciate us. Cater to us. Make us feel relaxed and at home. Otherwise, some of you guys won't be around for the next mess call. Now shove off and swap the deck somewhere else.
The two sailors slink off, and the men return to their game of cards.
Go on, you've been taking mine ever since we left Pearl.
About you, Canarsie, you want to play?
Me gamble? Nah. Anyway, I want to finish the picture.
There's more than one way to wet down a deck.
Operation Manticore!
Holy crap, come on, I'm dirty!
A sailor drenches the men with a water hose from an upper deck, and a brawl breaks out.
Yes, Bill?
A little trouble aft, Skipper. Some of Mr. Lawrence's boys tangled with some of ours.
Serious?
Not very. Usual black eyes, bloody noses.
A lot of injured pride, no doubt. I'm bound to have some friction sooner or later.
Why?
Well, you know, two different groups aboard a ship about to go into action. Nerves, tempers. Get all the facts, Bill. Line up all the men involved in the fantail, and I'll hold mass. Whistle when you're ready.
Aye, sir.
I wouldn't worry too much about it, Lawrence. It happened once before when I ferried Jack Cassidy and his UDT gang out to Evo. Matter of fact, most of these same boys were with him then. I gave them all a tongue-lashing and everything was ship-shape again.
Is that what you intend doing this time?
Maybe. Why?
It's your ship.
Meaning I can do a better job of running it? Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll hold mass to my boys, and you do the same on yours.
I'd like that, thanks. And you can be certain my men will give you no more trouble.
We didn't care about getting a free bath, sir, but look what they did to our skipper, Mr. Cassidy.
Yeah, Canarsie's been working on it for weeks, sir. We're all gonna sign our names on it and send it to Mrs. Cassidy.
Sure. A man got a right to stand up for his rights, sir?
What rights?
Well, sir, we're not just ordinary sailors. We're UDT guys, and...
That makes us somebody special, huh? Gives us the right to walk over everybody, throw our weight around.
Well, I think what Cotillo means...
I know exactly what he means. We're UDT men. Fearless, red-blooded, death-defying he-men. I know that song. And that's all it is, a song. It doesn't entitle any of us to extra privileges or favors from this ship's company. Mr. Klinger, I'm giving these men 8 hours extra duty. See to it that they deliver a full 60 minutes in every hour. Is that clear?
Aye, sir.
And I want it understood that no part of this ship is out of bounds to members of the ship's company. Remember that.
Can't say some of you.
The boyish Lieutenant Klinger smiles as Lawrence heads off.
The extra duty details of the ship's exec and give them to headquarters in the morning. Take it easy.
You know, Lawrence reminds me of a guy named Pulaski I used to know in Brooklyn.
Everybody reminds him of a fella he used to know in Brooklyn. Whoever came from Brooklyn that ever amounted to anything.
Winston Churchill's mother, the beautiful Jenny Jerome. Walter Hampton, Harry Houdini, Danny Kaye, Mae West, Gene Tierney, Susan Hayward, Mickey Rooney, Barbara Stan, McLean, Horn, and last but not least, Marvin W. Minkowski.
Who's he?
Yours truly, matey, and keep your eye on him. This kid is gonna go places and do things.
Like starting another picture of the skipper, but pronto.
But pronto. What am I, a slave? Don't answer that question.
A fleet of warships sailing beneath dark skies in a vast expanse of ocean. On the bridge, the captain and Lawrence study an accompanying ship through binoculars.
Call the flag, see if they're on the Nancy Hanks, Smitty.
Aye, aye, sir.
Smitty signals to the other ship.
Here's the message. Proceed. On duty. Assigned. Message coming through now, sir.
Hey, what goes? Do you see the blinker?
Lawrence looks puzzled.
He can. Infrared.
Well, don't let my men know about this, or they'll have even less respect for me, if that's possible.
Proceed on duty assigned. Good luck. Give him a roger, Smitty.
Aye, aye, sir.
Left 15 degrees rudder. Steady on course 285.
Steady course is 285. Rudder is left 15.
All engines ahead full.
All engines ahead full.
Well, Lawrence, looks like the curtain's about to go up on your bathing beauties.
Yeah. What time do we arrive in the area?
0600 tomorrow.
Okay, I'd better get started. I'll see you later.
Right.
Say, this fella Cassidy you mentioned this afternoon.
Jack Cassidy?
Yeah.
What about him?
What sort of a man was he?
He was quite a character. You know, the kind of a guy that could charm the ears off an elephant.
Yeah. The men thought a lot of him, huh?
Crazy about him. He was crazier about them.
He, got it at Iwo, didn't he?
Yeah, after a mission. On the way back from the beach. One of his men was hit and knocked into the water. Jack went in after him. Never been seen since.
When your number comes up, not a bad way to go. I'll see you below.
Right. What about some cribbage later?
No, thanks. Not tonight. I'm going to hit the sack right after briefing the men. Now as to the general plan of operation. This is Red Beach here. That's the natural harbor and entrance. This area over here is Green Beach. Now, based on aerial photographs and intelligence reports, the enemy expects us to hit Red Beach. But the Admiral wants to fool him and hit over here on Green Beach, if it's at all accessible. Our job is to find that out. Mr. Klinger, you'll take Flanagan and these 10 men. You'll go in on Red Beach strictly to create a diversionary feint. Blow up enough obstacles, man-made or otherwise, to convince the Japs that we're coming in here, Red Beach. I'll go in the other boat with Hodges and the rest to do a complete reconnaissance job on Green Beach. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
We shove off at 0600. Roger, hour 7:30, that's all.
Lawrence gathers up his map and leaves. Flanagan looks unimpressed as he heads down a corridor with Klinger and Hodges.
How do you like that? Do you remember when we hit Ewo and Mr. Cassidy briefed us? All he said was, I'll take half the gang and go over and have a look-see on Green. The rest of you go over in Red and kick up a ruckus. He makes everything sound like a presidential directive.
I'm very happy to string along with him. I mean, idea it isn't going to be so rugged on Green Beach.
Naturally, why do you think the commander picked Green for himself?
All right, knock it off. You'll both sit out the mission in the brig.
Is that bad?
See you manana.
Good night.
Good night.
I hear this.
In the crew's quarters.
The show goes on tomorrow morning. Everybody's in the act. The commander's going to do the recon job, and Mr. Klinger's going to turn on the fireworks. We're going to leave this bucket at 0600. So be on deck, ready, willing, and able.
Who are you going with, Jake?
Horse you like, Klinger.
Then I'm your man.
Me too, Jake.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah, Jake.
What's the matter?
That's it, all right.
A hilly coastline through looks binoculars.
Deserted as a beehive in June. Well, we're beginning to lob them over.
A plume of smoke rises from a hillside. The ship begins to bombard the hills with shellfire. Standing on the bridge, the captain and Lieutenant Bill Doyle watch the bombardment through binoculars. The captain checks his watch.
All engines ahead, one third, turns for 5 knots.
Aye, aye, sir.
Put boats 2 and 4 in the water, Bill. Have them drop aft for loading immediately. Put boat 3 in after they shove off with orders to stand by in case it's needed.
Aye, aye, sir.
Men clamber into a small craft suspended from a hydraulic hoist that tips outwards to lower the boat clear of the ship's hull. Now equipment and supplies are passed down into the boat from the deck of the ship.
All right, fellas. Let's get the other raft over.
On the opposite side of the deck, an inflatable raft is lowered into another boat. Bill checks his watch.
Mr. Lawrence, everything's set?
No. No, you can bet me you'll be here promptly at 0600. Not 1 minute before or 1 minute after.
Lawrence appears on deck and Bill checks his watch again. It's precisely 6 o'clock. Klinger smiles.
My group will go Rosemary 4-1, your group Rosemary 4-2.
Right.
All right, over you go. Shove off as soon as you're loaded, Mr. Klinger.
Aye, sir. All right, fellas, over the side.
The skipper said...
The men are all stripped down to shorts.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. Shove off. Full speed ahead.
Two boats head off through choppy water. Sitting low in the water, the two sleek square-bowed craft speed side by side towards the coast. Standing in one of the boats, Klinger looks resolute. In the other boat, Lawrence's men sit with diving masks perched on top of their heads.
Rosemary 4-2.
Lawrence grabs the radio handset.
Rosemary 4-2, this is Rosemary 4-1. Testing, over.
Hello, Rosemary 4-1. I heard you loud and clear. Hello, Rosemary 4-1.
I heard you loud and clear.
Right.
All right, put the boat in the water. Slow it down.
The inflatables lifted off the stern and dropped into the water.
All secure? Right. Pull ahead.
An exploding shell sends up a plume of spray off the boat's port side as it edges in towards the smoke-shrouded land. Lawrence's men adjust their masks and don flippers as artillery fire sends up columns of spray all around them.
Rosemary 4, this is Rosemary 4-1. Request smoke on Green Beach, over.
Ask the bombardment group commander to lay down smoke in Sector 2, grids 9 to 12, right away.
Aye, aye, sir.
Lawrence watches through binoculars as two warplanes pass low overhead, trailing thick white smoke.
Right.
Lawrence's men are crouched low in the boat, poised for action.
I don't have to tell you how important it is that the flag gets it. On it may depend the initial success or failure of the invasion. So take a good look at everything. And don't trust the memory. That's what those slates are for. When you're through, come on back to the pickup line. Stand by for the boat.
The boat's now just a few hundred meters offshore. One by one, the men lie face down on the side of the boat before sliding across into the inflatable. On a signal, each man then rolls off the inflatable and into the sea. The men's heads bob like a string of buoy markers in the boat's wake. Now grouped together, the men swim towards metal rods protruding out of the water at acute angles. Lawrence takes a large gulp of air before diving down into the murky depths. The metal rods are set in pyramid-shaped stone bases that sit on the seabed. Lawrence comes up for air. Taking a deep breath, he dives down again and swims between the large Sputnik-like obstacles. Lawrence surfaces beside Hodges, who's reaching for the small slate that hangs on a string around his neck.
Looks promising.
Yep.
On the slate, Hodges draws a simple depiction of one of the obstacles, with an arrow beside it and the number 36. Gunfire peppers the water around them, and they both dive. Lawrence's men unravel string from around their wrists to measure the distances between the obstacles, then note them on their slates. Then they measure their depth below water. ~18 feet is scrawled on one slate, and beside it, a downward-facing arrow. The men continue to plot the position of each obstruction. One obstacle has been constructed by setting the metal rods in a wooden log enclosure filled with boulders. Beside one of the obstacles, a frogman draws a small pyramid with two lines emanating from it, then writes 14 at 30 feet. Lawrence and some of his men surface for air. Diving down between clumps of coral, Lawrence brushes his leg against the jagged edge. He surfaces, his gaping mouth emitting a silent scream of agony, A deep gash runs the length of his calf. He swims away, beckoning to his men to follow him. Swimming some distance from the shore, the men spread out in a line across the water, each signalling with a raised hand when in position. Explosions flare in the hills along the coast.
Get set for the pickup run!
A man sits perched in front of the inflatable that's tethered to the side of the boat. He's holding a looped rope, and as the boat speeds towards the men, he extends it for them to grab hold of. As each frogman is hauled into the inflatable, the loop is held out for the next man to catch. Lawrence is the last to be hauled aboard.
Everybody here?
Yes, sir.
Good job, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Lawrence hobbles on his injured leg as he grabs a pair of binoculars. Through them, he sees the crew from the second boat waiting to be picked up.
You touch off the time, Jesus. Remember, you've got 10 minutes delay.
Roger.
Klinger swims away, leaving Flanagan holding a small box from which two wires extend.
Those Japs sure got this beach steak.
Flanagan swims over to Kinsella.
Worse. Nothing to get by that jungle of concrete and steel.
They dive down as gunfire strafes the water around them. Lawrence checks his watch. Hodges fires a flare gun and sends a bright flare arcing over the water. Flanagan pulls out a pin on the detonator. Kinsella pulls out the pin on the detonator he's holding before swimming away. Klinger's men drift into a line across the water and raise their arms to signal their readiness. The frogmen are collected one by one, reaching to grab the looped rope held out to them, again being hauled aboard an inflatable tethered to the side of the boat. As each frogman is pulled aboard the inflatable, he clambers over the side and into the boat.
Turn around and pick up Flanagan and Kinsella!
As they come under fire in the water, Flanagan turns to see that Kinsella's been hit in the arm. He swims over to him.
What happened, boy?
They winged me.
Boland's okay. Just bless.
Flanagan examines the wound.
We better get out of here, though. Those fuses aren't going to burn forever. Hang on to my belt. I'll take you out to the pickup line.
Flanagan raises an arm above the water as the boat heads towards them. The boat disappears in a flare of brilliant white light.
You better start paddling out of here. They'll pick us up with a sieve too.
Hodges. Rosemary 4, Rosemary 4. This is Rosemary 4-1.
Rosemary 4-2 received direct hit opposite Red Beach. Request standby boat to pick up possible survivors. Exercise extreme caution. Demolition charge due to explode in 6 minutes. Over.
Rosemary 4-1. This is Rosemary 4. Wilco, out.
Figure out, boys. We're back in the boat when it happened, sir.
They must have been.
Hodges spots Flanagan and Kinsella in the water through binoculars.
Full speed ahead. Maintain your course.
Why, we gotta pick them up, sir?
There's a rescue boat on the way.
But, sir, those men are ours.
Don't you think I know it?
The men share uneasy looks.
All right, swimmer 10.
Oh, that's me, sir.
Go ahead.
19, 19, 18, 16, 14, 10, 3, 2, 4.
Check.
Okay. There's a concrete hedgehog about 45 yards from the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
There's a coral crib about 15 yards from the shoreline.
Okay.
And no other obstacles.
Will powder take care of the hedgehog and the crib?
Yes, sir, about 125 pounds.
Okay. All right, swimmer 11.
Ditto with what Pappy said, sir. Only had one hedgehog at 30 yards.
Who's Pappy?
Creighton there, sir.
Got two sets of twins.
Flanagan appears in the doorway.
He lost a lot of blood. The doctor gave him some plasma, said he'd be okay.
Good, good. Were you both in the boat?
No. It was hit before we got there.
Could you see it?
Yeah, it was a direct hit.
Then there were no possible survivors.
I couldn't say for sure, sir. Under the circumstances, nobody could.
All right, prepare a missing in action list. Inventory the personal belongings of each man.
Aye, aye, sir.
What did Red Beach look like to you?
They've got it pretty well loaded, sir. We blew out some of the stuff, but not enough to mean anything.
You'd say that Red Beach was highly fortified and impassable?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Lawrence makes some notes, then becomes aware that all the men are looking at him.
I'm sorry it cost a few lives. It may save thousands. I hope so. Get some rest, that's all.
Flanagan heads out, stern-faced, and the other men follow him somberly.
Well, looks like the Japs are in for a little surprise.
Lawrence to the captain.
How much time before we come alongside the flag?
A couple of hours.
Two?
Maybe a differential of 10 minutes one way or another.
Okay, that'll give me time enough to get on some clothes and prepare my report.
When are you going to hold the service?
What service?
Service for the dead.
I hadn't thought about it.
Obviously.
Well, I hadn't.
I know you hadn't, or you'd have said something to the boys.
Never entered my mind. Never did it before.
We were lucky not to have had casualties before.
No, that's not what I mean. I've had casualties before. It's just that... I simply never thought of it before. We'll do it when I return from the flag.
Good.
Lawrence leaves the captain, drawing thoughtfully on his pipe.
Hot war. Boy, it sure feels good. When this war is over, I'm taking a bath every Saturday night, whether I need it or not. How you doing, Kinsella?
Still living and breathing.
Don't let Commander Lawrence hear you say that. He might try to do something about it.
Tried hard enough this morning.
Why get worked up over that hard-headed jerk? Attention!
I'd have mentioned this before if I'd thought of it.
Lawrence has walked in.
We'll hold services for the dead on the fantail.
Services for the dead.
He heads out.
I don't understand the man, Jake. He's really a good-hearted fella down deep.
A warm, lovable fella.
Have Commander Lawrence stand by for transfer to the flag.
Rendezvousing with a warship. The two warships draw alongside each other.
All engines ahead standard. Turns for 12 knots.
On the larger ship, a crewman prepares to fire a line from a rifle.
Heads up, here comes the line.
Fire!
With a rope line between the two ships secured, a metal-framed cradle seat is sent across on a winch. The crews of both ships look on as Lawrence is strapped into the seat.
Tighten up on the high line!
Lawrence ensures that his briefing papers are tucked securely inside his life jacket, then salutes the captain on the bridge. The slack in the line is taken up, and Lawrence swings out some 50 feet above churning waves as he begins his slow, precarious transfer to the flagship. He's hauled safely aboard and is swiftly unbuckled from his harness.
The approach to Green Beach is relatively clear. Whatever obstructions there are, we can handle by blasting.
What do you think, Jack? Looks good to me.
Almost too good to be true.
It is true, sir. You can bank on it.
No reflection intended on you and your boys, Lawrence.
Oh, you don't know these UDT boys, Jack. They're prima donnas.
Can you do this mission with the men you have left?
Yes, sir.
At what time will you be finished?
We're sure to be out of there at 0800, sir.
Good. HR stands as planned. 0900. Have this chart duplicated at once and send copies to all ships in the transport group.
Aye, aye, sir.
Well done, Lawrence.
Thank you, sir.
Don't let us down tomorrow. We're counting on you.
You can, sir.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Lawrence.
Yes, sir?
What's the matter with your leg?
Oh, it's nothing serious, sir. Tangled with some coral.
Well, look after it.
Thank you, sir.
Coral poisoning, all right.
It's got a good hold on that leg.
Should have told me about this morning.
Shooting a little temperature, too.
How high?
A little over 101.
What can you do, Doc? We got a mission in the morning.
You won't be on it.
I've got to be.
This is going to get lots worse before it gets any better.
Well, can't you fix it up so I can at least...
Best I can do, best anyone can do, is check. Keep it from spreading. It'll have to run its course 2 or 3 days, probably. Then you'll be all right.
Well, please do what you can tonight, Doc, because I'm going in the morning, fever or no fever.
No use my arguing or exercising my authority. Mama Nature will keep you aboard. I'll be back in a little while to cauterize the wound, start wet dressings, and begin feeding you sulfur.
Okay, thanks. And look, Doc, this is just between us.
Between us and Pete Vincent now.
Hey, it is.
All right, Lawrence. What is it?
No, my leg's acting up. I cut out on some coral this morning.
I thought I noticed you favoring it. What does the doc say?
And I won't be able to go on the mission in the morning. We'll see about that.
Doc Ullman's a pretty good man.
Rotten mess. Klinger gone, not a soul in the outfit capable of taking over.
Some of those boys impressed me as pretty sharp. They're certainly old hands at it. Cassidy had a lot of
faith. Yeah. Well, maybe one or two could handle it. There's Flanagan, possibly Hodges. Flanagan's probably the best choice.
This is no time to drop a monkey wrench into the works, but if you're thinking of Flanagan...
He hands Lawrence a sheet of paper. Lawrence looks shocked as he reads it, then eases himself painfully from the bed to reach a telephone mounted on the wall.
This is Mr. Lawrence. Have Flanagan, Kinsella, No, wait a minute. Never mind Kinsella, he's hurt. Flanagan, Creighton, and Minkowski report to me in the wardroom at once. That's right, thanks.
Now take it easy, Lawrence. You're in no shape.
I'm in plenty good shape. I know what's eating them. They need to be told a few simple facts.
Why not let me handle it?
No. This is my baby.
Hey.
Lawrence hobbles into the wardroom and is soon joined by Flanagan, Pappy, and Canarsie as they trot up some steps from below deck. Lawrence faces the three men across a table and carefully unfolds the sheet of paper.
The captain,
just handed me this. You have the right to make this request for transfer. I'll endorse it and forward it through channels when we get back. I don't want men serving with me who don't want to serve with me. But I didn't call you here to tell you that. I called you here to tell you that I know why you've asked for a transfer. It's because I didn't put about to pick up Flanagan here in Kinsella. Is that right, Flanagan? Well, let's not stand on formality. Speak up. Is that right?
No, sir. Yes.
The rest of you feel the same way, don't you? I thought so. All right, now I'll tell you why I didn't put about to pick you up. If I'd put about to pick you up, now we might have been lucky. Then I'd have been a regular guy in your eyes. Maybe even regular enough to be compared with Cassidy. But what if luck went against us? That charge was due to go up at any minute. What if it had? What about the big show tomorrow? You were on Red Beach, Flanagan. You know what would happen if they tried to hit it. Thousands of men would die unnecessarily. So that's why I didn't stop to pick you up. That's the decision I had to make. That's the kind of decision the Navy expects an officer to make. And that's the difference in thinking between us. Okay, that's what I wanted to make clear to you, why I called you here. We've got a mission to do tomorrow morning. It's got to come off. That's all that counts. Be prepared to shove off at Green Beach at 0500. Everybody goes but Kinsella. That's all.
The three men leave, and Lawrence winces with pain as he sinks down onto a chair.
What's cooking? I don't
know. Next morning on deck...
He's probably warning them that this is a strategic maneuver through an accessible area which separates the outlying fringe from the tactical objective. And unless this situation...
Lawrence walks up with Flanagan and Hodges behind him.
Good luck.
Hold this out, fellas.
The men start to climb over the side of the ship onto a rope net. Explosions rip along a coastline backed by tree-covered hills. Lawrence and the captain watch through binoculars from the bridge.
Looks like you fellas left more than enough smoke.
Two warplanes trail white smoke.
Who'd you put in charge?
Flanagan.
When I saw you this morning, I thought for a minute you were crazy enough to go along.
Well, I suppose sick or not, Cassidy would have gone.
Cassidy? I don't know.
Well, I was going to go, but I analyzed it, and I decided I'd be more of a liability to the mission than an asset.
Why don't you go below and lie down? It won't make much difference to the mission now.
It will to me. Thanks, I'm all right.
On the assault craft, Flanagan studies the coastline through binoculars.
You guys are busting to know what the score is. It seems Commander Lawrence picked up some coral poisoning and the doctor won't let him go in the water.
Coral poisoning?
Where did he pick it up? On the flagship?
All right. That's what they told me and that's what I'm telling you.
Coral poisoning my eye. He's got beachitis.
All right, save the wisecracks. We got a job of blasting to do. Now keep your ears open. Here's the score. Pappy and I will be partners and go in first. Then Hodge and Canassi. Then Marino and Sleepy.
As soon as you get through tying off your...
A huge explosion showers the boat in spray.
At least 20 minutes. 20 minutes. Do zero. You understand? All right. Here we go.
Flanagan is the first to lie prostrate on the side of the boat before launching himself into the inflatable. He waits for the signal, then rolls off into the water. The others follow as the craft speeds through the water against a backdrop of explosions and dark smoke clouds. Canvas packs and reels of wire are thrown overboard. Then the boat speeds away, leaving the men's heads bobbing in its wake. The packs are retrieved, and the frogmen regroup as they swim towards the familiar metal bars that pierce the water's surface at haphazard angles. The strap of each pack is looped over the tip of a bar. Then each pack is punctured with a dagger. Now the packs are slid down to the base of the bars and secured in place with wire. The men work methodically and meticulously, threading the detonator wire from one concrete base to the next. Flanagan dives down to tie a wire around the base of a bar before surfacing for a gulp of air. Plunging back underwater, he unravels a reel of wire as he swims. Another reel of wire is unravelled, and soon the men have created an underwater cat's cradle, with shorter wires tied vertically to longer wires running horizontally between the obstacles. The men tie the last few wires from the packs to the horizontal lines. On the surface, Flanagan and Pappy make some final connections. As each man completes his task, he surfaces. Flanagan checks that everyone's ready to retreat, then signals with a wave of his arm. As they swim away, Pappy suddenly stops and turns to Flanagan.
We clean forgot about the sign.
This is who skipped that, Pappy.
Skip it? Why? We got time.
Sure you want to do it?
I gotta do it. I got a 50-buck bet with my kid brother.
Well, let's get in there and get it over with.
The two men head back to the obstacles. Pappy retrieves a folded piece of material from one of the packs tied to a pyramid base and stuffs it into the waistband of his shorts. Now they swim stealthily ashore, crawling out of the shallows and up onto the beach.
Let's get to it and get out of here.
Flanagan lifts his mask and checks around him. Crawling a few feet further up onto the beach, Pappy retrieves the material from his waistband and they swiftly unfold it. They tie a stick to each side, then lift it into place and hammer the sticks into the sand with rocks.
Let's get out of here.
Flanagan crawls back to the water, but Pappy hesitates, returning to straighten the sign which reads, Welcome US Marines, USO two blocks right, signed UDT, team number four. Pappy collapses under a burst of gunfire.
I'll get you out in deeper water, see if you can swim. I'll try it, Pappy.
Pappy's floating on his back.
I can't.
Well, grab a hold. I'll tow you. We got a lot of time.
The rest of the men are clambering aboard the assault craft. One by one, they're hauled onto the inflatable, then into the boat.
That's everybody but Jake and Pappy.
Who are drifting unseen in the turbulent swell of the sea.
Rosemary 4-1, this is Rosemary 4. Report your progress. Over.
What'll we do?
Thank God we didn't hear.
What about?
Flanagan drags Pappy slowly and steadily towards the reconnaissance point.
One more run. Circle around and come back on the line.
Rosemary 4-1, this is Rosemary 4. Imperative, you report your progress.
Over.
What'll I say?
Didn't hear it. These things sometimes get banged up.
He kicks over the radio.
I can see him. Cut your engine.
There they come, Bobby. We're all right.
The boat comes to a stop beside the two stranded frogmen. One of the team jumps into the water to help, as three others in the inflatable heave Flanagan and Pappy into the boat. With everyone on board, the boat speeds away just seconds before a towering wall of spray erupts out of the water behind them.
Well, the radio must have gone haywire.
I'm sure glad they're back.
Tell the engine room to make turns for 3 knots.
Turns for 3 knots. Aye, aye, sir.
Have the crew stand by to pick them up, Bill.
Aye, aye, sir.
That sounds mighty good to me.
You really sweated this one out. Better get below and see the dock right away.
Would you please radio the flag? Tell them operation number 18 is completed.
We'll go.
Lawrence limps below deck, and the captain gives orders to a crewman.
Operation number 18 completed.
Aye, aye, sir.
Back on the ship, the team's enjoying some leisure time on deck. One's doing some stretching exercises.
Very nice.
Hey, Sleep, this time I know there'll be girls on the beach. Pretty hula girls. Lots of them.
Come off it, kid. You don't have to go through them maneuvers to get a gal in Hawaii. Even Kanasi does all right there.
Don't worry about me. Just ask any gal you meet in Hawaii about Minkowski's magic method of making moves.
How's Pappy?
About the same.
That harness, or whatever you call it, with them sandbags would drive me nuts.
What are they doing all that for, Jake?
It's his spine. He's still got a couple of slugs in it. He can't be moved or get tossed around any.
Why don't the doctors take out the slugs?
Search me, I don't know.
Pharmacist mate says they're going to do it at the hospital back at Pearl.
I think I'll go see him.
Boy, that Jake sure busted up.
Yeah. Tough Pappy had to get it. And him, the only married guy with kids in the team.
Hey, look.
One of the swabbies said...
Canarsie spots Lawrence.
First time in 3 days. Maybe he really was sick.
Nah, if you ask me, he was just pulling a diversionary camouflage.
Flanagan looks in on Pappy in the sick bay. Pappy's lying on his back, with a weighted harness lifting and arching the base of his spine.
They keep me pretty well doped. Pharmacist mate said you'd be okay.
Oh, sure. Takes more than a few slugs to kill me.
Well, we sure were a couple of dopes. I could kick myself.
Dopes? To pull a great gag like that on the Marines? I'd like to have a picture of my kid brother's face when he saw it. I bet he busted his britches laughing.
Hello, Flanagan. Good morning, sir. How are you, Creighton?
Not bad, sir. Thanks.
Good. Sorry I couldn't get in sooner, but the doc tells me you're going to be fine once those slugs are removed. When did it happen?
Just 2 seconds before we were picked up, sir.
Well, that's too bad. I'm sorry. Write out the details, will you, Flanagan? I'll need them for my report.
Aye, aye, sir.
And tell the men the flag radioed congratulations for a job well done. Add mine.
Thank you, sir.
See you later, Creighton.
Now, don't you go and make me out.
Lawrence heads out.
You put it down that it happened just like I told him. Why start anything?
Oh, Pappy, that's no good. Sooner or later, he's bound to find out about it. They'll probably have a picture of that sign in every paper in the country. Well, the heck with it. I'm going to tell him. He can like it or lump it.
Yeah, he'll lump it.
Well, let him. Yeah, I'll see you. Take it easy.
Roger.
Morning.
Good morning. I heard you were in for breakfast. Good to see you up and around.
Thanks, Vince.
Isn't it about time we dropped this Vincent Lawrence business? Most everybody calls me Pete.
Mine's John.
Okay, John. Have some coffee.
Help yourself.
Thank you. We can get some pretty good reports. Seems the landing was made with comparatively few casualties. The doc give you a message from Flag?
Yeah, thanks.
Sounds like a presidential citation.
Well, the team rates it. I'm glad for Flanagan. He did a great job.
Yes, Bill?
Quoted message from SyncPack.
Bad news, huh? I can always tell by Bill's chin if the news is good or bad.
Oh, it isn't that bad, Skipper.
Concerns you and your team, John.
Yeah?
Looks like we'll be parting company soon.
Why's that?
A rendezvous with submarine Jack SS-259 at 1900 Greenwich Civil Time on 9 June at 2430 North, 152 East on special mission for UDT Team 4. Commanding officer submarine will supply all detailed information.
Mm. Where would that be?
Right here, sir.
A real hot spot.
Suppose the Bonans are our next objective, Skipper?
Who knows? What do you think, John?
Last I heard, we were going to bypass the Bonans.
Well, no use speculating. We'll know in a couple of days. Well, Bill, we better look after this.
All right.
Bill and the captain leave the wardroom just as Flanagan comes up from below deck. He hesitates at the top of some steps before heading into the wardroom.
Come in, Flanagan. Sir, it's about how Creighton got hurt. It didn't happen the way Pappy said.
How did it happen?
Well, sir, you know how the Marines are always saying they're the first to hit the beach. It was never set very well with us UDT guys, so... Pappy and I rigged up a gag to pull on the Marines. We planted a sign on the beach saying, "Welcome, Marines." with the team's number underneath it.
Well, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You mean you and Creighton went ashore and planted that sign on the beach?
Yes, sir.
Before or after you touched off the charges?
No, we took care of that first, sir.
That's a wonder you didn't overlook that minor detail. Is that where Creighton got hurt?
Yes, sir.
Flanagan, you were in charge of this mission. I put you in charge because I thought you had intelligence enough to realize its importance.
But everything went off all right, sir. You sent yourself the flag, congratulated
us. You missed the point. You've been missing the point ever since I took over command of this team. You're a brave man, all of you are. You wouldn't be in this outfit. Nobody questions that. But your kind of bravery comes 10 cents a dozen and isn't worth a hoot more when the chips are down. And the chips were down on that deal. Klinger was gone. I wasn't able to go. I counted on you. I pulled for you to come through a man. A full man, brains and guts. I was even dope enough to think I might talk you out of transferring, recommend you for Mr. Klinger's spot. But you not only can't fill that job, you're not even responsible enough to remain a chief. And when you transfer out of this team, you won't leave as a chief.
Is that all, sir?
Yes, that's all.
Flanagan turns coolly and leaves.
Come in. Ah, John.
The captain's cabin.
I was just listening to some trumpet playing. I fool around with it at home.
No bother.
When my wife's out, that is.
Don't shut up. You need
to. Sit down. Thanks. Had enough anyway. How's the leg?
Fine, fine. It's, not my leg that's bothering me. Another request for transfer.
He hands the captain a sheet of paper.
Looks like you've got what amounts to a legal mutiny on your hand.
Yeah, it's a fine kettle of fish with that special mission facing us.
You must have known that telling Flanagan you were going to bust him wasn't going to endear you to him and his mates.
So look, I'm not here to win popularity contests. Flanagan jeopardized an entire mission, to say nothing of the lives of his team.
On the basis of the book, there was nothing else to do, of course, but...
But what?
Well, everybody works differently. I don't know what to tell you, John.
Well, I'm no Cassidy.
Who said anything about Cassidy?
Well, you practically said it. Sure, sure, everybody works differently, but not everybody wants to understand that. I know what these men want. They want a glad-hander and a grandstander. Well, I'm neither. I never have been. People take me for what I am or leave me alone.
Why get all worked up about
it? Because I get so... Because it must be my fault.
Lawrence sighs.
It's nobody's fault, really, John. It's just that... Well, these men are hero-worshipping their dead idol. They resent you for stepping into his boots. They'd resent anybody who had to follow Jack Cassidy.
Yeah, I suppose so. And of all the strange breeds that might have come along, it was their bad luck to get me.
For what it's worth, I don't think so.
How about a little cribbage later?
Lawrence smiles gratefully.
General quarters! All hands manual!
The cabin's shaken by a sudden lurching motion.
Collision! Port side aft! General quarters! All hands manual!
Up. We've been hit by a torpedo. Port side aft, sir.
Sonar, do you still have the submarine?
Yes, sir. Range 200, and opening.
Looks like the sub's moving away from us. I'll turn away from her and open the range. Right full rudder.
Right full rudder, sir.
Port ahead full.
Starboard back 2/3.
Port ahead full, starboard back 2/3.
Lawrence looks over the side as the ship turns. The men assemble on deck, and a gun turret turns. Below deck.
Back, sir!
Ryan taps at the sickbay door. Inside, the unexploded torpedo is lodged beside Pappy's waterlogged bed.
Back, sir!
Give me the lantern.
Ryan opens the hatch and climbs in.
Back, sir!
Take it easy,
Ryan shines a torch on the front end of the torpedo, which resembles a giant malevolent marrow.
Doctor!
The doctor climbs through the hatch.
Damage control. This is Ryan. Looks like the torpedo's a dud. About half of it flies into the side, sticking into the sick bay. And we're taking water. If it doesn't get any worse, I think the bilge pumps can take care of it.
This is the captain. We've been hit by a torpedo port side aft in the area of the sick bay. Fortunately, the torpedo was a dud and no one was injured. Doc says the patient was a bit shaken up, but is all right.
I'll go have a look.
Lawrence and Doyle are waiting as Ryan climbs out of the hatch.
The bilge pumps are running at full speed. And rig up a working light for us.
Yes.
I better lead the way, sir.
Go ahead.
The doctor's checking Pappy over as Lawrence descends into the darkened sick bay.
Okay, good.
Can he be moved up through there, Doc?
Impossible. It'll put too much pressure on his spine.
I see. Take it easy, kid. We'll get you out of here.
Know anything about torpedoes, sir?
A little. Had a few days of this stuff during training.
What do you think, sir?
Warhead's been damaged. Had one like this back at the base. They called it the Kingdom Come type.
Think we can take a chance on it till we get to port?
That'd be a long shot.
Well, the Honolulu was hit by that torpedo, and they got back to Pearl.
And the circumstances are different. We got a damaged warhead, a patient here that can't be moved, and a mission to complete. I think we better take this up with Vincent.
Well, you can call him on the phone there, sir.
All right, you want me to do it?
You know more about it than I do.
Okay.
This is John, Pete.
Lawrence heads over to a wall-mounted phone.
You got a rough decision to make.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a tough one. You think it's a dud?
Well, it may be a natural dud where the exploder never was armed. That's happened before, even to our own torpedoes.
Well, what's your hunch?
Well, I'm no expert, but I'd say we ought to take a chance on removing the exploder mechanism. The odds are too big against assuming that that fish isn't armed.
You know how to do it?
I'm willing to try unless you've got somebody aboard more qualified. Okay, then I'll take a crack at it.
Have Doyle order all unnecessary personnel forward. Good luck.
Thanks, Pete. Vincent says to go ahead and try to remove the exploder mechanism.
What do you need by way of tools?
Believe it or not, nothing but one screwdriver.
Let's have a screwdriver.
Lawrence uses a blanket to try to stem the water pouring through the hole made by the torpedo.
You all right, Creighton? Or do you want the doc to give you a shot or something before he leaves?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
I'll have someone stand by above in case you want anything.
That's a good idea.
Now, here's the light. Okay. Let's go, Doc.
How's Peyton, Doctor?
He's all right.
Have all personnel move forward on the forecastle. And I'd like a volunteer to stand by here.
I'll stay here, sir.
All right, Flanagan. Make sure nobody's left in this part of the ship. All right, on the double, everybody.
Pappy watches as Lawrence tries to plug the leak with a blanket. Lawrence wades over to the hatch and peers up through the round aperture.
Lower the work light in the portable bilge pump.
Aye, aye, sir. Work light coming down.
Aye,
aye. Bilge pump coming down, sir.
Lower away.
A sudden cascade of water washes away the blanket. Lawrence hangs the work light above the gushing stream of water.
Flanagan, lend a hand here.
Aye, aye, sir.
Try and plug that up.
Flanagan rams the blanket into the gap with a screwdriver as Lawrence begins to unscrew a plate in the torpedo's nose cone.
A thin piece of wood there. A few of those tongue depressors will do it. Did you ever see the inside?
Lawrence prizes up the plate with the tip of a screwdriver.
grab that lamp. Bring it over here. I'm going to try to raise this high enough so you can insert those depressors between the firing pin and the detonator.
The torpedo shifts slightly, and Lawrence and Flanagan share an uneasy look.
Stand by.
Okay, I'm scared too.
Flanagan's hand is shaking.
Something holding it. They usually slip out easily. Got any ideas?
No, sir.
Nothing to do but keep on trying to pry it, I guess. Made some progress that time. We're still here.
The plate raises a few millimeters.
How much higher does it have to come, sir?
I don't remember. Another inch or two should do it, I think. But you better call the bridge. Ask the captain to slow down the ship a little.
Aye, aye, sir.
Flanagan goes over to the phone.
Yes, John. Commander Lawrence would like you to cut the speed down a little, sir.
Wilco, how's it coming?
We're still working on it, sir.
Let me know the minute you've disarmed it.
Aye, aye, sir.
All ahead, one third. Make turns for 5 knots.
All engines ahead, full. Turns for 5 knots. Aye, aye, sir.
This is the captain.
I'm sorry to say there's no progress to report as yet about the torpedo. I'll keep you posted.
Well, this next move should decide.
What? Can I get another bilge pump, sir?
No time. Stand by. Now, you see the pin she's triggered, all right?
A complex mechanism of cogs and levers. Flanagan gingerly places a strip of wood resembling a lolly stick beneath a spring-loaded pin. Pappy closes his eyes and breathes a deep sigh of relief. Lawrence grabs the phone.
That's great. Good work, John.
Aye, aye.
This is the captain. Mr. Lawrence and Chief Flanagan have succeeded in disarming the torpedo.
Damage control center, this is the captain. Get the repair crew busy right away building a cofferdam around that hole.
You got an extra cigarette? Thanks.
Flanagan offers him one.
Oh, brother, it sure feels good to be alive.
Then lights it for him.
Sure does, sir. Were you ordered to stand by up there, Flanagan?
No, sir. Mr. Doyle asked for a volunteer to stand by.
I appreciate that, thanks.
Pappy's my buddy, sir.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's that. There's nothing more we can do here. The repair party will be right down, Frazee.
I'll stay with Pappy until they show up, sir.
All right. You did a good job, Flanagan.
Thank you, sir. I know Pappy would have done the same thing for me.
Of course.
I'm beginning to smell the soft Hawaiian breezes. I can almost taste some fresh pineapple dunked in rum.
My mind's on a grass skirt with a pretty wahine in it.
Your mind? What mind?
You suppose we'll get the same liberty we had the last time, Jake?
Who knows?
7 days liberty with my pretty Leilani. Just terrific.
Hey, we're circling! Yeah, we're slowing down. Look, a submarine!
Its long, slim, black bow rises above the surface of the water.
What do you make of it, Jake?
I got a feeling that Honolulu is far, far away.
Oh, no.
Now fully surfaced, the submarine floats close to the ship, and a man wearing a peaked cap appears on the bridge. He uses a megaphone.
Ask Mr. Lawrence to get on the bullhorn.
Break out the bullhorn.
This is Lawrence, sir. I've got sealed orders for you and 10 of your men. Bring nothing with you but your toothbrushes. We've got everything you'll need. Let us know when you're ready to come aboard.
Roger!
Oh, no, no, no!
Well, how do you care for them apples? And all that time, Hardhead let us think we were heading for Pearl.
Put boat two in the water, Bill.
Oh, yeah, sir.
Well, I'll be looking for you, same spot, same hour, 3 days from now. Good luck, John.
I'll try my darndest to keep that appointment. So long, Pete.
The teams ferried across calm water to the submarine. Two officers watched the boat approach. The boat's throttle is pulled back as it draws alongside the submarine's curved flank. Ropes are tossed onto the deck and the team clambers on board.
Get all these men below as quickly as possible. The captain wants to submerge as soon as we can.
Aye, sir.
The captain's on the bridge.
Follow me. Aye.
The team's led to a large hatch in the center of the deck. Lawrence follows Miles to the bridge.
Glad to see you, Lawrence.
Thank you.
All ahead standard, steady on course 180.
All ahead standard, steady on course 180.
Harry, whenever you're ready, take it down to 200 feet where it's nice and quiet.
Right, sir.
Whatever it is they want you to do, must be awfully important. I got strict orders not to run on the surface during daylight. Let's go below. I'm hankering to open those sealed orders.
Right, sir.
The submarine slowly slips below the waves, causing barely a ripple on the ocean's surface as it does so.
I worked up a pretty good case of hives. Wondering about your mission.
Well, I've been doing a little wondering myself, sir.
I bet you have.
Here we are.
Good.
Don't you have any idea where we're going?
Oh, I know where we're going, all right. Right smack into Jap country. But I've been itching to know why.
Well, the mystery is solved. We're ordered to blow up the only known Jap submarine pen south of the home islands.
Well, what do you know? Submarine pen, huh?
Yes, sir.
We'd better break out these things. Probably our charts.
Right.
We've got a job of studying ahead of us.
This is Commander Lawrence speaking. All members of the UDT stand by for briefing at once. All members of the UDT stand by for briefing at once.
Mr. Flanagan and five men will create a diversionary feint. I and my group will make the hydrographic reconnaissance, etc., etc.
And we leave the submarine 2 hours before daylight, 0300. Meet me here fully dressed and equipped, ready to go at 0230 for a final briefing. Any questions? Okay.
Lawrence goes to leave the men, then stops and turns back.
This one. After that, we'll part company. I'm sorry we didn't hit it off, Dutter. But I want you to know that I think you're a great UDT team. And I'm proud to serve you. That's all.
There it is.
The submarine captain peers through a periscope. Lawrence takes a look. A ship lies anchored off a headland, and a cluster of buildings nestles at the water's edge.
When you're ready, I'll surface to let you off. Then I'll submerge right here, lie on the bottom. When you return, give me a did-da-did. Three times on the hull, hard. And I'll surface to take you aboard.
Did-da-did three times on the hull, hard.
That's right.
We're ready now, sir. I'll get the men.
Good.
The submarine surfaces under cover of darkness.
And remember, no talking on...
The team emerges through the hatch onto the deck. They're wearing full diving suits. Working in complete silence, the men make ready two inflatable boats. The deck hatch is closed, and Lawrence signals for the men to lift the boats. The first one is dropped over the side and held against the submarine's hull with ropes as men climb down into it. The second inflatable is tipped into the water. Oxygen tanks are passed into the boats. The submarine captain looks on anxiously from the bridge as the rest of the team boards the boats. He gives a farewell salute as the two inflatables are paddled away stealthily into the night. The submarine dives back into the ocean's depths. The two inflatables are paddled ashore beside a rocky promontory. The crews drag their boats out of the water and start to unload their equipment. Now kitted out with their oxygen tanks on their backs, Lawrence leads his team back into the water. They wade out a few yards before dropping into the water and out of sight. A myriad of tiny fish swirl beside a coral reef. The team swims in single file above the reef, a torrent of tiny bubbles rising from their oxygen tanks with each breath they take. Most are holding packs, but one is carrying a huge pair of bolt cutters. Lawrence turns and signals to his team before slowly rising up to the surface. He surfaces beside a rusty metal buoy with Japanese symbols on its side and a bell mounted on top. A silhouetted ship is anchored a short distance away. Lawrence slips his mask back over his face and dives down to the others. He gestures for them to follow him. The team swims on through the murky water. Swishing their flippers behind them, they glide smoothly through the water with an ease burdened only by the three silver oxygen cylinders on each man's back. Their progress is suddenly impeded by a square mesh metal curtain stretched out before them. Lawrence gestures for his team to stop, then indicates for some to swim to the right and others to the left. A frogman holding bolt cutters grasps the mesh. Above, a Japanese patrol boat is moored at a pier. The thick square mesh is interlaced with slender wire. Lawrence shows it to his men and shakes his head, indicating for them to avoid cutting it. He holds aside the wire as the jaws of a bolt cutter clamp around a rod of the thicker metal mesh. The cutter's blade slices through the rod, and the frogman moves on to the one below it.
Oi, tabaco arka.
On the pier, a Japanese guard asks another for a cigarette. His comrade offers him one from a packet, then lights it for him with a match. The frogmen have cut a square hole in the mesh, large enough to swim through. With one man on either side holding the wire clear, the others swim through the hole. On the pier, the guard with the cigarettes lights one for himself. A frogman nearly snags his oxygen tanks on the mesh as he swims through the hole. The two men holding back the wire are the last to swim through. The first negotiates the hole successfully, but the second slices through a wire with his oxygen tanks, causing a light to flash unnoticed in the guard room. The guard is standing on the pier, savouring his cigarette break. Leading the way, Lawrence gestures for the team to stop and heads up to the surface. Set into the base of a hill at the water's edge are four large square entrances. Lawrence dives down. The second guard notices the flashing light, and the first reaches for a phone. The team comes to the base of a large stone pillar. Beyond it, Lawrence spots the propeller blades of a submarine. He indicates for two members of the team to set the pillar with detonators. A small boat heads across the water. On board, a soldier mans a machine gun, while three men slip on diving gear behind him. Underwater, a second pillar is being set with explosives. With the packs tied to each pillar and linked by a web of wires, the team begins its retreat. The boat arrives at the pier, where a finger points to the flashing light on a board that indicates a precise location. The men climb back into the boat and set off. Their tasks completed, most of the frogmen swim back through the hole in the mesh, leaving behind three of the team to wire up the last explosive pack. Lawrence is one of them. He checks his watch, then gestures for the other two to go. As they swim away, Lawrence struggles to remove the sheaths on the ends of some of the wires. He rips away a couple, but is forced to abandon another. He swims away, leaving the silvery sheath tip bobbing in the water. A Japanese diver climbs over the side of the boat and into the water. Seeing him approach, Lawrence draws his knife. They grapple briefly, both plunging their knives into the other side. Then Lawrence punctures the diver's air pipe. In a burst of bubbles, the diver sinks slowly down to the seabed, and Lawrence unravels himself from the dying man's limbs. Another diver jumps in and attacks Lawrence. As the other two frogmen reach the hole in the metal grid, one of them spots Lawrence and the diver engaged in a desperate struggle. They swim to Lawrence's assistance as another diver homes in on him. The water's stained dark with blood as Lawrence sustains another knife wound and sinks slowly to the seabed. A frogman plunges a knife into one of the divers as the other goes to Lawrence's aid. Lawrence is stranded on his back on the seabed. Meanwhile, a frogman swiftly dispatches the other diver with his knife. Bubbles stream from the sheathed wire tip as the two frogmen help Lawrence up from the seabed and swim away, each holding an arm. Columns of bubbles continue to rise from the wire tip. The three frogmen reach the metal buoy. Lawrence raises his mask and chokes as he takes a gulp of air.
We'll pull you in,
huh? No. That'll take too long. If we have to stop, then we'll all get knocked off. Well, listen. Remember what I told you. Knock three times on the hull of the sub hard. Three times hard. Get out of it. That's a signal.
That's it. Get our ditch three times hard.
Right. That's the boss.
Let's toy him in.
No, you've got your orders. Come on.
Let's toy him in.
Lawrence passes out. A huge explosion rips apart the submarine base.
All right, I'll take over.
A submarine surfaces next to a ship. A boat ferries between the two, and soon the UDT team is climbing on board. In the sick bay, Lawrence lies in a bed beside Pappy. Lawrence yelps as he tries to move.
Yeah, fine. It's just the darn bandages.
Lawrence sighs heavily. Flanagan walks in, carrying a board under his arm.
Hi, Jake.
Hi, Pappy. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
Yeah. Put your John Hancock on this. Down here.
He props the board on Pappy's stomach.
Get her asleep.
No. Hi, Flanagan.
Good afternoon, sir. Canarsie finally finished this picture for Mrs. Cassidy. We'd like it to come from the whole team. Would you sign it, sir?
You want me to sign?
Yes, sir.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Thanks.
Go up at the top, please.
He goes to add his signature to the bottom of the others. Flanagan smiles warmly, and he and Pappy both look at Lawrence with a newfound respect.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Would you like a cigarette, sir?
Yeah, please.
A look of contentment crosses Lawrence's face as Pappy passes him a cigarette. Lying on his back with one hand tucked behind his head, Lawrence takes a drag of the cigarette and smiles to himself. The ship plows on across the open ocean.